Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001, Seattle's Fat Tuesday Riot.
Hello. As we all know, there was an earthquake in Seattle on Wednesday morning last week. The news media have covered all the aspects of that earthquake pretty thoroughly. Some of us undoubtedly also are aware that there was a riot in downtown Seattle just a few hours before the earthquake. I watch the CNN news every morning and usually every evening too. When I watched the news last Wednesday morning, the earthquake hadn't occurred yet, and so there was brief coverage of the riot, which had occurred Tuesday night and into the wee hours of Wednesday morning. On my television screen, I saw a crowd of disorderly young white people, most of them in their teens and 20s, engaging in some pretty serious vandalism. I saw one young white man jump up on the hood of a car and begin kicking in the windshield. Others smashed store windows. Pretty disgusting behavior generally, but not really unexpected in this age of self-indulgence, permissiveness, irresponsibility, and alienation. The occasion for the riot was the end of Mardi Gras, so-called Fat Tuesday, the last day before Lent. Lent is traditionally a period of abstinence and fasting for Christians, and so Mardi Gras is typically a period of feasting and partying. There had been some rowdiness, hooliganism, and vandalism in Seattle during the previous two or three nights of Mardi Gras celebrations, but nothing like the riot on Fat Tuesday. Police officials estimated the total number of people milling around late Tuesday night at 9,000, and there were 350 policemen waiting on the edge of the crowd to keep things from getting out of hand. Young women were baring their breasts. There was a great deal of drinking, and there was an occasional fight. The police watched, but for the most part didn't interfere. In the television coverage I saw, there were few, if any, blacks in the crowd. The CNN reporter said that about 70 people had been hospitalized, that the police had arrested 20 or so people, and that was about it. That, at least, was my impression of the Fat Tuesday riot in Seattle, and I suspect it also was the impression of most other Americans who were not actually present during the riot. Then came the earthquake Wednesday morning, and after that there was nothing else said about the riot. It was all earthquake news, except that I kept hearing rumors. People wrote to me and said that the Fat Tuesday riot really had been a race riot with gangs of blacks attacking, beating, and robbing white people. Well, that wasn't what I had seen on my TV screen, and so I discounted all of these rumors. I figured that there may have been a few blacks involved in the riot, and that some observers had focused on just what the blacks were doing. But what I had seen on CNN had convinced me that whites were misbehaving pretty badly, and so whatever had happened in Seattle couldn't have been purely black-on-white attacks, as some people were telling me. But I was curious enough to check out the Seattle news sources, just to be sure that there was nothing racial about the violence. I checked the two major newspapers, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and the Seattle Times, and also the website of the main TV news station there. What I learned from these news sources agreed with my initial impression from the CNN news report I had seen Wednesday morning, just before the earthquake. There was some additional information. One young man who had been injured in the Tuesday riot had died the next day in a hospital. That was 20-year-old Chris Keim, a good-looking young white man, a healthy, clean-cut, all-American kid, judging from the news photos of him. But there was not a word about race or about blacks attacking whites. I'll read you a few sentences from the main article about the riot in the Wednesday edition of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. I quote, "Tuesday's Fat Tuesday celebration disintegrated into ugly brawls early this morning as groups of toughs roamed Pioneer Square, smashing bottles, setting off fireworks, and attacking anyone in their path. Police said 72 people were treated at area hospitals, including 2 with life-threatening injuries, and 21 people were arrested. Up to 3,000 revelers had been expected, but police this morning put the total in the Pioneer Square area at 4,000 and said another 5,000 were in the surrounding area. The crowd centered at First Avenue and Yesler Way for much of the night. Partiers were rowdy but generally calm before midnight, drinking, dancing, and showering beads on women who bared their breasts. But in the early morning hours, the mood changed drastically. Many fights broke out, shattered glass littered the area, and the crackle of fireworks filled the night. At least 2 cars were overturned. One young woman was beaten to the pavement by several women and men, and later another woman was slammed against a wall and struck several times on live television. Ugly street brawls sporadically erupted as the crowds dissipated toward the International District. A series of fights broke out at 2nd Avenue and South Washington Street, leaving one man lying unconscious in a pool of blood. Bands of hooligans cruised up Washington Street on foot, and by 2:15 a.m., 2 more men were left bloodied and senseless near 4th Avenue. One man lay curled in a fetal position, his body half on the sidewalk, half in the street. Blood spread from an open gash above his mouth. "He just got jumped," said Eric Osborne, 20, of Seattle, a friend who witnessed the pummeling. "About 10 guys, some of them with mini bats, just grabbed him and beat the hell out of him." Moments later, 5 men beat and kicked another man until his body fell limp into an intersection. They flipped over his limp body, pulled his wallet from his back pocket, and then left him lying in the street. End of quote. Well, there's quite a bit more in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer story about the riot, but not one word about race. Not one word about what caused the mood of the celebration to change drastically. The words black and white are not used once in the story. And there wasn't any discrepancy between the story and what I had seen on the CNN television news broadcast. Then on Thursday, I received an email letter from an observer in Seattle that went into much more detail than the rumors which had reached me earlier. I'll read the whole letter to you. I quote, "Dear Dr. Pierce, we want to share with you the real story in Seattle this week. On Tuesday night, during the Mardi Gras Fat Tuesday celebrations in downtown Seattle, 350 riot-geared police stood idle while several hundred young people began to mingle peacefully outside the bars and clubs, which were closing early. Suddenly and without warning, a group of 12 to 15 black males with an equal accompaniment of black females began to pick out at random, drag away, and beat to a bloody pulp any young, defenseless white person they could find. The victims were between 19 and 32 years of age. All were white, usually blonde. Many were young ladies who were hunted and chased, their long hair pulled violently from behind. They were punched severely with roundhouse attacks, and finally, after being thrown to the ground, were kicked mercilessly until bloody, broken, and unconscious. It was then that the black girls finished the job by literally ripping anything of value from the usually unconscious young victim. This scene was repeated for approximately 3 hours by several different groups of incredibly violent, animalistic blacks, and ended only when our police chief, Gil Kerlikowski, was up to send in the riot police with armored cars, tear gas, horses, and ambulances. The race riot then ended within 15 minutes as the black gangs vanished with the first signs of tactical response. With more than 60 young people in local hospitals and one young blonde man beaten to death by these animals, we thought this might at least have made local nightly news. But due to the earthquake and the powers that be, Not even my neighbors are aware of these disgusting events only minutes from our homes. The big story you and the rest of the country will be hearing about, of course, is our 6.8 magnitude earthquake of 10:55 Wednesday morning. The real story, which will not be shown by any of the media, is the three-hour series of black-on-white hate crimes that took place within eyesight of our esteemed police force and our terrified police chief. We are angry, frustrated, and disgusted, and we can only hope that you will pass this terrible news on to the rest of our nation. We thank you, and we support you. End of quote. Well, that letter inspired me to dig further. I asked two other people who had written to me to help me gather more information about what had happened in Seattle. Finally, in the Friday edition of the Seattle Times, in a story about the murder of Chris Time, the truth began to come out. The story begins, and I quote, "Christopher Time never knew what hit him. Jostling with close friends in the increasingly violent crowd at Mardi Gras in Pioneer Square on Tuesday night, he saw a young woman knocked to the pavement by a group of violent attackers. He bent over to help her to her feet, fearing she would be trampled. That's when someone from behind smashed a bottle into the back of Time's head. He crumpled to the pavement unconscious. Several attackers sat upon him wildly, kicking him in the head before moving on." End of quote. Here's another paragraph from the same story, a description of events by one of Kime's friends who was with him that night. Quote, "We were in our own little group, and fighting was breaking out everywhere," Knotson said. "I saw a girl being pulled around by her hair until she was knocked down, and somebody was kicking her. It was disgusting, a whole group of people beating up one person." End quote. So far, that sounds like all of the other news coverage of the riot I'd already read. But then, near the end of the Seattle Times story, was the following paragraph. Quote, "Witnesses said the man who hit Kime from behind was black, that he may have been part of a roving group of young black men and women who police say attacked many white partygoers in the crowd. But police spokesman Benton yesterday cautioned against concluding that the attackers were motivated by race." End of quote. Well, that's it. The first real news about the racial nature of the riot. Everything prior to that had been just what people on radio talk shows claimed they had seen or had heard from their neighbors. And I was getting that secondhand since I'm 3,000 miles away and can't tune in to Seattle area talk shows. I never depend on rumors for the things I report to you in my broadcasts. But the story that I just quoted from Friday's Seattle Times was enough for me to ask one of my people to locate and obtain some of the video footage of the riot, which had been taken by cameramen at the riot but wasn't used on national television news programs, such as the CNN news program I had seen. When that video footage arrived, it clinched the story. It clearly shows gangs of blacks attacking one white person after another, viciously and murderously, white women as well as white men, knocking them down, repeatedly kicking them in the head and stomping on them, while other whites, including the police, just stand and watch. And about the time I was first seeing those images, the dam broke back in Seattle. The story which the media bosses and the politicians had tried so hard to suppress burst into the open. An Associated Press report from Seattle, released last Saturday, is headlined, "Seattle Black Leaders Concerned Blacks Blamed for Mardi Gras Violence." The report begins, and I quote, "The city's black leaders worry that young blacks are being singled out for blame in the Fat Tuesday riots that left one man dead, another hospitalized, and at least 70 people injured. The issue was not race, but crime," they stressed in meetings Friday with Mayor Paul Schell and Police Chief Gil Kerlikowski, end quote. The black president of the local chapter of the Urban League was quoted in the report. We are concerned by how the violence is being portrayed. Our fear now is that it's become a race issue. Well, it certainly wasn't and isn't being portrayed as a race issue by the local politicians, including the police chief. They were falling all over themselves trying to convince everyone that it wasn't a race issue. Clem Benton, a spokesman for the chief of police, told the Associated Press reporter, "We're investigating these crimes as crimes. This is all about criminal activity. It's not about race." And Dick Lilly, a spokesman for the mayor, piously told the reporter, "Clearly, hatred has no place in our community. The implication is clear. If you even think that there was a racial basis for what happened in the Fat Tuesday riot, you're a hater." Well, thank God there are some white Seattle citizens who aren't afraid of being considered haters. These are the citizens who saw with their own eyes what happened and then refused to keep quiet about it. They talked about what they saw on Seattle's radio talk shows, and they kept talking about it until the politicians and the major media had to give up the pretense that race wasn't an issue. If it hadn't been for the radio talk shows, the people who don't want the world to know what really happened in Seattle on Fat Tuesday probably would have been able to keep the news suppressed. Last Saturday's Associated Press report quoted one radio talk show host, quote, "The people who very clearly were creating the mayhem, as plain to me as to anyone else, were African Americans," said Brian Suits, host of a call-in radio show. "The most crystallized opinion I heard was from a guy who perceived Seattle police were specifically staying away from looking racist," Suits said. "They're gun-shy about the perception of coming down hard on one single group." End of quote, end of Associated Press report. So now you know what happened in Seattle on Fat Tuesday, and a substantial portion of the citizens of Seattle know too. But most Americans still don't know, for the usual reason. The big media, the national media, which are controlled almost completely by Jews, don't want you to know. There are several interesting aspects to the Seattle story, in addition to the fact that a series of violent, murderous, black-on-white race attacks took place there last week, and the media and the politicians tried to hush it up. Blacks were just behaving the way blacks naturally behave when the constraints are removed. And the Jewish media bosses and the politicians who dance to their tune were just doing what we've seen them do over and over again in other places and at other times. In dealing with the Wichita massacre of December 14th, for example, which I've detailed for you in several recent broadcasts. The difference between Seattle and Wichita is interesting. In both cases, the big media, the Jewish media, killed the news at the national level and kept most Americans in the dark. But in Wichita, the local media dealt with the rapes and murders of the young whites by two blacks in a fairly forthright way. So far as I could tell, there was no attempt to keep the people of Wichita in the dark. In Seattle, on the other hand, the major media tried hard to keep even the local citizens from knowing what had happened. Why the difference between the two cities? I don't really know, but I'm inclined to believe that it's primarily due to the difference in the white populations of those two cities. Washington is one of the whiter states in the country. Only a little over 3% of the population is black. Seattle is a much more fashionable place to live than Wichita. There's a much higher percentage of yuppies and soccer moms in Seattle than in Wichita. Seattle is a trendier city than Wichita. It's more liberal, more feminized. The people in Seattle have given indications on more than one occasion that they feel guilty about the whiteness of their area. church groups in Seattle have sponsored the immigration of Hmong tribesmen from Southeast Asia and are into all sorts of other programs intended to increase the diversity of the area so that the white yuppies and soccer moms can feel better about themselves. Political correctness is bigger in Seattle than in Wichita. Washingtonians are quite proud of themselves for having elected a half-Chinese mongrel for governor of their mostly white state. That sort of thing would be much less likely in Kansas. The fact that the Seattle police were so terrified that they would arrest more blacks than whites in a mostly white crowd and then would be charged with racial profiling, the current liberal bugaboo, and so stood and watched the blacks go on their murderous rampage without interfering, is interesting. I'm pleased that at least some of the white folks in Seattle noticed that and weren't afraid to comment publicly on it. Mandatory sensitivity conditioning for cops is just the sort of trendy thing that Seattle's yuppies and soccer moms would be in favor of. I'm sure that what happened on Fat Tuesday hasn't changed any of their minds, but it may have caused a few of the more perceptive and open-minded residents to begin thinking about the dangerous consequences of psychologically castrating the police with sensitivity training. A disturbing similarity between Seattle and Wichita is the failure of the whites to defend themselves or their kind. In Wichita, three able-bodied young white men stood and watched helplessly while two blacks raped their women, and then all of the whites knelt obediently in the snow and let the blacks shoot them in the back of the head one at a time. In Seattle, thousands of young white men stood with their mouths open in surprise and watched blacks chase young white women through the crowd, knock them to the ground, and kick them. The only exception of which I am aware is young Chris Kime. If the blacks hadn't killed him when he tried to help a white girl they were attacking, perhaps he would have been charged with a hate crime for interfering with the blacks' rampage. The sort of spineless passivity displayed by most of the young white men in Seattle in the face of black violence against their women is far more disturbing than the drunken vandalism I saw some whites engaged in. I am sure that some of this passivity is the consequence of the general feminization of our young men. I also am sure that part of the reason the young white men in the crowd failed to organize, arm themselves with baseball bats or whatever other weapons they could find, and put a quick end to the black violence against other whites is the media conditioning they have been receiving all their lives. They were afraid that to have opposed the blacks would be racist. It's hard for me to feel sorry for whites who are victimized by blacks in the way the whites of Wichita and Seattle were. White people who will not fight don't deserve to live. White people who are not mentally and morally prepared to fight don't deserve to live. And white people who are surprised that blacks behaved the way they did in the Fat Tuesday riot clearly aren't prepared to fight. Thanks for being with me again today.